We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by the Genesis Company. Coming in Wednesday morning, it's February 8th. After the Wolves lost in Denver on Tuesday night by 34 points, 146 to 112. I promised to try and talk about that game for as little as possible today. But we do have to talk about it because that game served as yet another reminder that this team, while it's had some high highs, can have some really low lows, shockingly low lows. Given what I was just thinking about, like, given what this team was pitched to be at the beginning of the season, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns comes out for the year saying championship or bust. And I think we forget that in the context of all that. Of course, Kat's been out and he's out for that game. But when the Wolves do play a real championship contender last night, and yes, no Kat, no Kyle Anderson, It is jarring in these games how far away this team can look from being on that level. So, I don't know. Let's get into it briefly. I'm joined by Wolves beat writer Jason Frederick from the Pioneer Press. Jason, start with that first quarter last night. The Wolves were up 13-12 in the first, and from that point forward, Denver went on a 33-2 run, I believe. And at the end of the quarter, it was Wolves 19, Nuggets 49. Jace, what the hell happened?
I honestly forgot that it was 13-12. Like that, that feels so wrong that that was the case. But you're right. I mean, essentially, the Wolves started making some really dumb turnovers, and Denver just ran up and down the court. And that's one thing we've seen about this Wolves team pretty consistently. Like, if you make a concerted effort to push the ball on Minnesota, you will get a lot of easy buckets. And Minnesota certainly aided in that cause last night. But, you know, Jokic is a smart enough player to be like, okay, if I get the rebound, I can really chuck the ball down the court, and this team's not going to get back, and we're going to score a lot of points. And, like, 16 assists, I don't know how many of them are probably just, like, home run throws. I mean, right, you know, like, just chuck it down the court. Let's get 2 points out of the deal on the other end 2 seconds later.
Why, though, has it not been a problem sometimes?
I don't know if they've solved the problem. I don't know that. Or I don't know if teams just don't look at the... I think teams looked at the Gobert Towns front court and said, let's run. Mm-hmm. And when Towns isn't out there, now it's just Gobert and Kyle Anderson.
But I guess it was Kat and Nas last night. So that maybe there's more of that intention.
Yeah, that might have been more of it. You know, I think Minnesota again tried to ram in the two centers look, and I understand it with what they wanted to do with Jokic, that frankly, like, they didn't even really get that much of a test on it, because like
it so much of what Denver did was in and transition. Then Nas had two fouls, yep, and they're like, all right,
and they never went back to it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's a big part of it, is like when you go too big, then teams really want to push, and that's when you get exposed. I don't think teams have had the same intent to do it over the last couple months, because it's just not as obvious of a thing. Minnesota's probably gotten better at it too, but that's been my biggest thought.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's interesting when you know it's on the scout, right? Like, as it was the first 21 games of the season when it's Carl and Rudy, like, and you're just doing your game-to-game scout, it's like, okay, like, run on this team. Where you're just the opponent, you're cycling through different teams, and you're not doing like a playoff level deep dive. But it's just like a basic thing, you know, all right, this team's got two centers on him. Like that is intention number one on our board. And I think about that from the context of a playoff series, right? Once you start being the opponent and digging into it further, I mean, that is going to be, point being, that is going to be something teams continue to attack against this team. And I don't know, at times we have seen the Wolves have the intention, and maybe it's just more effort. And so maybe it's in the context of a playoff series, they're going to be like, all right, we're in the playoffs, we got to bust our ass. Like, and getting back in transition is critical. But team, whoever they play in the play-in, playoffs, whatever, like this is what teams are going to try to do. And then that speeds the Wolves up, which often leads to more turnovers, which leads to this floor falling out thing, right? Like, it's okay to lose, right? Like, you know, particularly to the Nuggets. But it is just kind of wild how much the floor can fall out beneath this team. And I don't know what exactly to attribute that to, other than the fact that the team is very young. And I just think that's an immature trait. I think Finch has said, you know, something along those lines before, that this team has immature traits, and that ability to just crater is an immature trait that this team has, though has had less, to be fair, has had less of those recently.
Yeah, it still just doesn't seem like it should be like that. Like, you know, you have Rudy Gobert on your team. You have, you know, a D'Angelo Russell entering the prime of his career on your team. You've got, you know, like you're playing Torian Prince a fair amount of minutes. Like, I know, like, that you have a lot of your veterans are out right now, and that Austin Rivers is suspended. Kyle Anderson missed the game. Cat's obviously out. But still, like, it feels like that can be a case with this team no matter what. It is a trait. Like, it's part of, like, as Finch would say, it's like in their DNA.
Yep.
This is one of those things that is in their DNA. So I guess the good thing for Minnesota is, like, in the midst of a playoff series, that might happen, but it probably would only happen once. So it's just one of those games that you would boot away. And then you hope that you can, you know, win four out of the other six. Mm-hmm. But it is something that throughout the regular season, when you see it like once every 2 weeks or so, like, it's not always a full game like this. A lot of times it's a quarter. But it is, like, this doesn't happen to every team every night. It's something that they need to address as to why it's happening. And that's probably another thing you can look at just in terms of team DNA. How can we alter that this week at the deadline? Like, is there something we can do to get that out of us? It's not always just like, I need to add shooting, need to add defense, need to add rebounding. It's like, how do we get some of these?
Well, how do you, I mean, is things? That's like adding a Pat Bev, right? Like if you're trying to throw an ingredient into the mix here that would neutralize that, it would be the fiery veteran present. And maybe it's not Pat specifically, but it's mature, whether it's at the deadline or going forward. Like, this, I think that goes different last night if Pat's on the team. And I'm not even like a huge proponent of Pat being back on this team or whatever, but that's what is missing.
No,
and different.
Pat,
yeah.
Pat's not. I mean, I watched the second half of that Thunder game after.
Like, after, you called it, I mean, the Thunder game.
I've seen enough Lakers games. Yeah, well,
it was the Thunder game. It wasn't the LeBron game.
It wasn't the LeBron game. It was the Thunder game. After the Wolves game ended or whatever, like, Josh Giddey took Pat Bev to task. Yeah. Like, it's just not. I don't think that would. I don't know if Pat Bev would play minutes on this team, frankly, because he's just, his play has fallen off that hard. But something to that effect, or even just more of a stabilizing force, like a Kyle Anderson, makes it a little more difficult to get just blown off the floor. But I don't even view this as the same as that, as like some of those other games. I really kind of viewed this more as like Denver came out with an intention of being like, we are going to blast this team. Like, we've played this team. You could hear it in Mike Mullen's post-game comments. Like, they're like, what happened tonight? And he's like, well, the three previous times we played this team, we were on the second half of a back-to-back. And tonight wasn't, and I think that's the difference. I think they wanted to show, like, we are way better than Minnesota.
Yeah.
We've played them three times on back ends of back-to-backs. So I'm sure Minnesota did feel as though, like, they are right there, like, stride for stride with us, and we want to prove otherwise. And so I took this as, here's a team like Denver who decided to take their game up a notch last night. And Minnesota had nothing in terms of matching it, which just made me wonder, like, what is Minnesota's, like, max level? Like, do they have the same gear that some of these other teams maybe have that is going to be required when the playoffs come?
Good question.
I don't know. I don't know what their top gear is. Right now, like, these times where they're, like, beating these good teams, I'm like, was that Minnesota's top gear? You know, or was that, like, do they still have more to get to? Obviously, Cat coming back, you know, changes everything about this team. But just in terms of this group right now, like, what is their top gear? How can that line up against, like, a Denver coming out full throttle? Because last night, that was a no contest.
You know, the top gear for the Wolves includes Ant being at top gear, right? And that historically has been about, you know, a level of consistent focus from Ant. And I think, you know, credit to him. And he has had that. He's been significantly more consistent and driven throughout these past few months. Though, like, it sometimes it's not just about effort and having that rhythm. Like, he did get in foul trouble. And that if there is, like, a going forward basketball related take from that, it's that foul trouble for Ant really discombobulates this team. It doesn't happen that often, but it's like, you know, it can happen as it can happen to anyone. And you look at when it was 13-12 in that game, it was like right before Ant picked up his second foul in the first quarter. And the normal rotation pattern, right, Jace, is Ant plays basically the entirety of the first quarter. Yep. And so Ant gets subbed out X amount of minutes into the game after he picks up that second foul on Aaron Gordon. And then, you know, the 33-2 happens and it goes into, you know, and I tweet that out and I see on Twitter, whatever, and it's like, oh, what is Finch doing? He's putting that lineup out there, yada, yada, yada. And yes, was it not a good lineup? That is a lineup that he was somewhat forced to play. I mean, he could have gone different variations of it, but he's somewhat forced to play it given that there's no Kyle Anderson, given that there's no Austin Rivers. And that just, again, the bottom falls out there. And the learning thing to take from that is okay, like, if I'm Finch or if I'm the other guys on the team, next time Ant picks up two in the first quarter or three in the second, four in the third, whatever, it's like, hey, we got to, like, turn this up here because our margin for error has now been deleted without him. And I just thought that that was a big part of their identity is trying to start strong. Like, they actually have a really good first quarter net rating, and it's because Ant plays the entirety of the time. And when he has to come out less than halfway through that first quarter, that really seems to allow things to fall apart. So I don't know. Like, Finch had to take him out there. I didn't really love that he took him out when he had three fouls in the second quarter and they're down by like 25 or whatever. At that time, Ant was like the leading scorer in the game. And I'm like, all right, I get it. Like, your guy has three fouls, but maybe here, Ant, a player who doesn't historically doesn't have a pattern of getting into foul trouble, maybe we could have left him in for the rest of the second quarter and at least prevented this game from getting completely academic quickly. And I didn't really see it from where I was sitting. I think Ant was frustrated with that. But that's like the only like real nitpick I can have on Finch. Is the third quarter. I know a lot of people are really frustrated about those lineups. I'm like, all right, well, what do you put out there? There's not really
ton of alternatives. It totally is like, okay, well, they're missing two of their wing players last night in Rivers and Anderson, and then Nas gets in foul trouble. And then it's like, and Ant obviously is in foul trouble. And it's like, you realize they only have so many players, right? Like, there aren't secret good players hidden on the end of the bench that he's just not tapping into.
Josh Minot, like, bro, he looked good.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. It's like, I mean, there really aren't alternatives. You have to play somebody. And yeah, your fifth, sixth wings, like, they're not very good. I mean, that's just kind of the case. And there's a lot of weaknesses there, and they can get exposed, like, is what it is. I mean, it's it seems like almost every loss now, like, I know this isn't, you know, the overwhelming majority, but it's like every loss you look at Twitter and it's like Finch should be fired. It's like, okay, there are going to be losses throughout the season. This team is missing guys. They missed a lot of guys. But to your point, like, I agree totally on like the first quarter, like, that is what it looks like without Ant, especially against a good team. Yeah. Like, Minnesota, especially banged up, doesn't belong on the court with a lot of these teams, but Ant has been such a great equalizer for them this year. Like, he has raised their water level up to the point where at their best they can compete with these teams, even when they are shorthanded. But once you take him out, it's like it's all bets are off. And it's like, oh, okay, there's a huge discrepancy here in what the other team has on the court and what Minnesota has on the court. Maybe that discrepancy isn't so huge when you get Cat back. You can play a different way. He can line up a little differently, but as far as like what they've had this season, it's why like Ant has been so important. Like he has literally been the reason why they were able to go stride for stride with a lot of these really good teams. But like how they look without him out there, that's also why they've been able to lose to a lot of teams too.
Jason, let's take a quick break and we can still kind of talk about this all through the lens of last night's game and the last couple of games. But I want to talk to you a little bit about the trade deadline and how the trade deadline kind of correlates to some of these players, Jordan McLaughlin, Karl-Anthony Towns, and even Austin Rivers and Kyle Anderson coming back, how that should maybe sort of shape our view of what, or our opinion of what this team needs or doesn't need at the deadline. We'll be back with Jace here in a second. Today's show is brought to you by the Genesis Company. The Genesis Company is the MVP of the business game. With their advanced marketing techniques, they've helped over 300 brands generate over $3 billion in retail sales. So if you're an entrepreneur with any size brand or product, they're the best in the business. And for being fans of the pod, they're offering free access to their proprietary AI technology that helps founders uncover the true potential of their brand. Find out how big your brand or product should be. Don't let your competition steal the lead. Email them at grow@thegenesiscompany.com and claim your spot at the top of the game. That's grow@thegenesiscompany.com. Today's show is sponsored by Hyacinth Restaurant in St. Paul, and I love having local businesses on as sponsors like the breweries and like Hyacinth because they are places I can really picture you going to and enjoying. Hyacinth is a place that I personally have really come to love. I'm not at all a foodie, so at first I was kind of worried about working with an award-winning Italian restaurant. But then I went there, and the vibe was homey, not at all pretentious. I felt comfortable. And the food comes out. The food is amazing there. Obviously, high-level Italian cuisine, but also diverse in the options you can choose from. So Hyacinth, that's spelled H-Y-A-C-I-N-T-H, has genuinely become one of my favorite restaurants and a place I actually frequent in my personal life. I said before, we went there for my mom's birthday in December, and we also went as a family a few days after Christmas. I mean, you're going to go to restaurants in 2023. So if you do live in the cities, I really would highly recommend checking out Hyacinth. Support a local business and support a business that is specifically tied to our little Wolves community we have here. That's Hyacinth Restaurant in St. Paul on Grand Avenue. All right, Jace, let's stray as far as we reasonably can away from that debacle in Denver on Tuesday night and talk a little bit more about the rest of this week and kind of what this whole week has been. You know, you get Jordan McLaughlin back into the mix, which certainly addresses a need of this team in backup ball handling duties, which I think if I had to point to one thing that this team needed for the previous 30 games, it was point guard play. I think, you know, Noel has not shot the ball well this season and has struggled, but I do think at least some of that is attributable to the fact that he's had to play point guard, that he hasn't played against Jordan McLaughlin. That kind of messed up the entirety of the wing rotation just because they're so thin at the guard, particularly playmaking guard. So I say that to mean that I think this team can and will address some very obvious needs just by getting players back and getting healthy. Does that for you change at all the way you view this trade deadline and what they might or might not aim to do here on Thursday?
I think it probably does for them. Yeah. I think what's interesting for me is like, yeah, you look at like all these guys coming back and it's like, well, player A can fill this hole and player B can fill this hole. And then there aren't like as many glaring weaknesses. For me, it's like, what are your goals for this season?
Yep.
And what do you think the goal should be for this season too? Because like you mentioned Kat saying like championship or bust, and a lot of people are like, oh no, I don't think so. And Tip Connolly's like, I just want to get to the second round. Do you feel like you can do that right now? Do you feel like you've got a team for that? And then like you want to at least be competitive, right? Like the whole idea of getting to the second round from Connolly's perspective is anything can happen once you get there. Mm-hmm. And it all comes down to like health and whatnot. But you have to have a team that doesn't just squeak into the second round. Like you ideally have a team that
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, they do have a team that could get to the second round, right? Like, I wouldn't be. I mean, if they played like the Kings in the first round,
right.
Like, they could get to the second round, you know?
Yeah, right. And,
but I think even that, like, that requires context, too. It's like, should that count as getting to the second round in the, like, greater aim of where this team is at if it's a win over the Kings to get to the second round? Like, I think what that really means, what Conley is saying by being a second round team is that means being actually a top four team in the West.
Right. And he's one being like essentially one of the eight best teams in the NBA. Right.
Yeah. And that's not what beating the Kings is necessarily. That is what beating the Nuggets in a playoff series. That'd be even probably even better than eighth. That's what beating the Grizzlies would be. And, you know, we've talked about this before of like, I was saying I thought they matched up pretty well against Denver. There's like, I'm not saying it's like a 0% chance that they could beat one of those teams either. But
right.
Like we run 1,000 outcomes out. They are not at that level. And, you know, how desperate do you want to be to get to that level at the trade deadline when your resources are already so thin? It's why I think like, and particularly after last night, everyone's like, oh, this roster needs to be shaken up. It needs to be all this and that. It's like, well, yeah, to get to being that top eight, top 10 team in the league, obviously, I think like the roster needs to be tweaked. But do you do that now when you have such limited resources? It's just, my answer is no. I'd be using the deadline of ways so as to tweak this roster so as to maybe a year from now, maybe at the next deadline, you're putting more resources in to be able to be that top eight team. Now, I don't know. You have such limited resources that it doesn't make a ton of sense to me to really invest those in the team this year, in a year where Karl-Anthony Towns is going to miss 50 games and there's still clearly an acclimation process. I understand the fan base desiring that, but I just wonder what the logic is there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And like this acclimation process is probably going to be bumpy. Like that's something that we all talk about, but need to really be prepared for. Like coming out of the break, it might look really bad, you know, with Kat and like, and they might lose some games because of it, and they might end up in the play-in because of it, and they could get bounced in the play-in because of it. You know, like there aren't that many games left. I mean, that's just kind of the reality of the whole thing. They're going to have like 20 plus odd games left here after the All-Star break.
21 after the All-Star, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like that's not very much. That's how many they played before Kat went down.
Exactly.
You know, and it felt like they didn't find their way then. Are they going to find their way now heading into the playoffs when everybody else is kind of ramped up? I don't know. This might be like a season that could end up being where you're like, oh, it's kind of lost because of the Kat injury. What complicates matters is like, I think a lot of people think Rudy Gobert has not looked like the same player that he was in the past. And you can say part of that is acclimation. And part of that is like, is he just lost a little bit? Like, has he lost a little bit of a step? Not a full one, but maybe a quarter of a step.
Yeah.
And now next year, he's going to be another year down the road. And obviously he won't have played Eurobasket, but like, what version are you getting of Rudy Gobert each year after year here? Because like, ideally, this was going to be the best season of Rudy Gobert, you know, like not in terms of acclimating himself to the roster, but just physically, it doesn't figure to get better from here as he continues to climb up into the 30s as far as his age. So I think that's what complicates all of this is like trying to line up different players like this. Like, is he going to decline as a player? I don't know. I don't know if that's their big concern heading into next year, but it is.
No, dude, it's a conversation. I was thinking about this on the Sunday game when they played Denver and Denver didn't have anybody and DeAndre Jordan's out there. And Rudy Gobert, DeAndre Jordan at his best was never what Rudy Gobert is probably even now, right? But DeAndre Jordan was an all NBA center and that fell off quick, you know, once he got to 30. And that's kind of a fundamental question of all of this is, you know, is Rudy going to be the type of center in the NBA, elite center in the NBA, who falls off in his early 30s? Or is he going to be, you know, that star type of player who is still really driving winning at 33 years old or whatever. You know, obviously you think about this in the context of last night with like LeBron at 38 or even, you know, obviously lesser guys than that too. Chris Paul, whatever, that really sustain into their mid to late 30s. And that's a pretty fundamental question when you talk about building this team out going forward. And, you know, to be fair, we haven't seen all this, the acclimation, blah, 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 all that, but that can't 57 odd games or whatever into the season. I didn't really consider that before the year. I was like, okay, yeah, like the end of Rudy's contract, you know, he's going to be 33 years old. Like that will kind of be the fall off point. I didn't think it'd be his early 30s. And I don't think it necessarily is yet, but it's a fair question, you know, to kind of bring up as we talk about things like the trade deadline that are moves that address the future, right? You know, if they're trading for somebody at the deadline or whatever they're going to do in the offseason, it's about tweaking this team for the next 2 to 3 years. And I don't know what to bank on from Rudy or like acknowledging that might be the opposite too. It might get way better with Rudy, with the acclimation, with Carl, with all that stuff. Like it could. We don't know, but yeah, again, just a fundamental question. And like, let's not rule out the possibility that it could kind of fall off relatively quickly.
It just totally is like this team, if with any quote unquote window, like Ant's window is massive. Cat's window is pretty dang big, like, but Rudy's window is not. And you acquired this guy and he wants to contend for championships, and you acquired him with the idea that you would contend for championships, I think, with him. Guess what? It's going to work out where, like, come February, March, it looks like your team's going
to
be, like,
pretty cool. You know what, Chase? I don't think they acquired Rudy Gobert to win a championship. I really don't.
Well, that's everything that we've been told is basically not that. But the players thought so. So
I think the Rudy Gobert acquisition was about pushing this team into being relevant, right? And not that that's even like a bad strategy, right? Like you kind of got to take the steps forward before you can even get to the contender level. But I think Rudy Gobert was traded for to make the Wolves relevant for the next couple years. And that's new ownership. That's a whole bunch of different things. And the glass half full, make some winning habits and all that stuff. But I don't know. I just don't think it was realistic to say that you're trading for Rudy Gobert to be a championship contender in the next year or two. I just don't think that was the primary motivation there. I think the primary motivation was to become a franchise that is no longer viewed as the Timberwolves, you know? And I also, that's not what the fan base was told. They were told contender. They were told championship or bust. I just wonder if that was one of those situations where they were selling a bill of goods with the greater good in mind, probably, of, you know, wanting to build something. But I think that has kind of skewed so much of the perception of this season. And I don't want to totally go all the way down this rabbit hole and negative just after a 34-point loss, because that would seem reactive. But I think we need to talk about that stuff, that it's not. It was flawed logic to think you were just going to add Rudy Gobert and all of a sudden be a top 8 team in the West. Or, and they said even bigger than that, you know? I think a contender is a Western Conference Finals team. That's a top 4 team. I don't know. I just haven't watched 57 games now. I think it was naive to believe that Rudy Gobert was going to make them a contender. And I don't think they're dumb. I don't think that's what in their heart of hearts they believe the Rudy Gobert acquisition was going to be, at least in the next year or two.
And frankly, like how I even framed it when they got him was the habits thing. Like you mentioned, like I viewed it as like, okay, you have Anthony Edwards, you have Jaden McDaniels, you are having Rudy Gobert theoretically raises your floor to the point where you're consistently, you know, in the playoffs, making pushes for second round series, and then that maybe is the best way for Edwards and McDaniels to grow, is guaranteeing that they have those experiences. And this still might all end up exactly like that. And I guess from afar, from like the macro perspective, I would have been like, yeah, that's kind of what I thought it would do. It's just when you're in it, it just feels different.
Yes.
You know, like when you're watching it on a night to night basis, it's like, well, this isn't like great. You know, like there, and maybe that's the whole idea of like the macro versus like the micro. And maybe you do need to step back and look at the bigger picture, because when you're in it on a day to day, it's like, this probably isn't what they thought. But like you said, maybe it is. Without the injuries, maybe it is.
And I think there's converging factors in that too, right? Of wanting that, of wanting to develop Ant, and thinking that being a high 40s win team would expedite Ant's growth process. I do think that that was part of this here. I also think part of it was becoming relevant with new ownership and changing the identity of the franchise, which is important to do as well. And we like say that like it's some sneaky negative thing. I think it's just,
it's not, it's definitely not.
It's the reality of professional sports. And as I just watch this team frequently not look like they're at that level, that's what I go back to. And I don't think that's the end of the world at all, because it is still Ant. It is still Jaden. It always, for me, has been about that window. Like, that's where I think the next time the Wolves are a real contender, I believe it will be in the Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels window. And this is not that window right now. Obviously, Ant has launched himself into the forefront of this window as well, but he's 21 and Jaden's 22. And I don't think this team is going to be a contender until they're in their prime. And so they are navigating this time by trying to become relevant. I think that is what this is. And it's not the way we normally talk and think about this team. But as I think about this team with the trade deadline and the macro, as you said, we should think about that when we talk about the trade deadline and we talk about the offseason. We talk about what is going to happen going forward. Let's let go of the idea that this team is currently constructed as a contender. It's not. It's a good team. It's been, honestly, been way better than I thought since Cat went down, and it's an intriguing team.
Like, you know what's interesting?
Go ahead.
Like, you say way better than we thought, and I don't disagree, but yet when we first talked about it, we talked about 500 being like, yeah, it'll be like 500 with Cat out, and they've been 500 with Cat out. And we're like, well, it's been way better than we thought. It's like, no, that's what we thought it would be.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, but maybe the factor is, you know,
probably the duration of it probably is the biggest thing. Like, they've had to do this for a long time, and they've managed to do it.
And what if just Cat was out, too? Like, what if just Cat was out and you had, I mean, it's they're just role J-Mac. Players. J-Mac, yeah, Kyle Anderson, TP, all that stuff. Like, they would be over 500. So to that end,
agreed,
they've exceeded my expectation. And that is why I say it's a quote unquote good team. It's just injuries have made this. Well, we didn't know what the team exactly was going to be, and they didn't know who it was going to be. They were going to find their identity over the course of the season. And then plus the injuries, it's skewed so much like productive way for them in the front office to even be able to analyze this thing. And if I was in that front office room, I'd be like, these are the kind of hard questions that they need to be having right now as they think about changing the roster in any sort of significant way tied to D'Angelo Russell or whatever it might be going forward, or making moves now that tie into moves you might make this summer. You have to be, if you're the Wolves front office, thinking about these things.
And you talked about like that window thing with Ant and Jaden, and I totally agree. And that's what I think makes Naz Reid so difficult. Is like,
actually, Jason, can we grab? Let's talk about Naz, and let's talk about Naz. The Naz, Noel, D'Lo, kind of the trade deadline. Let me grab a moment break here, and then we'll close out with that.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, we're back with Jace Frederick from the Pioneer Press. Sorry, Jace, I cut you off before what I'm sure will be a brilliant Naz Reid take here related to the trade deadline, but who is, in all seriousness, like kind of exactly what we were talking about before the break. One of those guys of, like, you need to understand the direction of your franchise before understanding how and where and to what degree you want to commit to a player like Naz Reid. He's kind of the perfect encapsulation of this, though it seems like a super micro example. Continue with what you're saying.
Well, I think the biggest thing is, like, right now, and when Cat comes back, I don't think Naz Reid will be some great contributor to what you're doing at the end of this season. Like, I don't know how it's going to fit where he is, like, a big piece as far as you trying to win playoff games or even winning games in March and April. Like, this season, I don't know if you're going to look at it and be like, wow, thankfully we had Naz Reid on the team. You might watch that in April and be like, should have got an early second-round pick for this guy. Should have taken multiple seconds for this guy. Should have gotten something. Because he's not going to be worth whatever he wants on the market.
But or a Bones Highland or a player on a rookie deal. Like exactly, people hate right, when right. we say multiple seconds. And
Yeah.
The multiple seconds are cigarettes in jail, right? They're future trading pieces. Like, and that isn't that attractive. But it's like a Naz for Bones Highland type deal. That isn't out of the question. And to your point, if it's April 12th and the Wolves are looking like they're going to be the 9 seed or whatever, and you're like, man, if we could have flipped Naz for a player who's on a rookie deal who has multiple years left, like at that time, that will become like, damn, why don't we do that?
And Naz at that point might be playing like 8 minutes because it might be like, we're already playing Rudy and Kat next to each other. We got to play Kyle Anderson at the four. We really don't want Naz next to these guys as much as we tried to ram it in there. It's just not as good as when Naz is playing at the center or he's starting at the center and he's playing 30 minutes a game. But that's what makes it interesting because, like, you need to know your direction in that it might not look that great this year if you decide to keep Naz, but you've seen enough now. And you talk about that Ant Jaden window. And I hear Ant talk about Naz to know that he would love Naz Reid to be on his team with the Timberwolves moving forward. He loves his abilities, his skill set. He believes in Naz Reid. Naz Reid definitely believes in Anthony Edwards. I don't think it's far-fetched at all to say, like, it would be a good idea to have Naz around as a piece of a Jaden Ant core, 2-3 years down the line, because we see how much better Naz gets every single year. It would give you a ton of optionality if, like, things weren't going the way you wanted it to with Rudy, Cat, whatever, to have a guy where you're like, well, we'll see what Naz Reid becomes, because literally the rate at which he develops is crazy. He has a great fit with these younger players, and just moving on from him, he just seems to fit so well alongside that timeline that it looks like short-sighted to be like, well, he's not going to help us now, so maybe we should just move on. When
it's totally both, right?
But if, like, the goal is 2 years down the line or 3 years down the line, I think he can help you a lot. You know, it's a catch 22.
Totally. I think that's the, like, most fundamental, fascinating thing about the trade deadline and building this team going forward is making moves or not making moves right now that might benefit this team 2 years from now. And Naz, it can be either way. It can be, as you just said, keeping Naz and maybe if one of Kat and Rudy aren't here, then, you know, he makes a lot more sense than 2 years down the road. And it's like, man, I'm glad we signed Nasri to that 4-year extension. But it could, there's like the other way of it too, where it's like, okay, do you trade Nas for Bones Highland? Who, like, Bones Highland, I think, really makes no sense on this roster currently that has Jalen Noel and D'Angelo Russell. But D'Angelo Russell and Jalen Noel aren't expiring contracts. And I think it's probably more likely than not that both of them aren't on the team in a year. And then someone like Bones Highland makes a ton of sense in that. So that's totally the catch-22. And it's why I don't really have a firm opinion on what the Wolves should or shouldn't do. Because, again, I don't know what the Wolves' primary motivation is or primary plan for building this thing out. Like, what are they looking at being a year or two down the line when Anthony Edwards is 23 years old and probably an all-NBA player? You can make arguments. It could go either way, yet you kind of got to make some of those, at least the smaller Nasri type ones. You need to kind of start making those decisions right now, whether it be trading him or giving him an extension. It's a weird thing that is a product of this roster construction and a product of just salary cap wise, how this all works. I talked yesterday about it is just equally bizarre how expensive this team is about to be and how expensive it won't be a year from now. You know, like, they got this window to really kind of tweak this team out this summer with some cap space potentially, before never having cap space ever again in Anthony Edwards' career. It's like, it's like a sports business classroom, hypothetical presentation of like, what should we do here? There are arguments, multiple different directions here. And I'm fascinated to see what Tim and the crew opts to do.
I think, and we'll never know, like, you know, they won't go like publicly into the motivation and anything they end up doing or not doing. But I think our biggest thing is like, just make moves within your totality of the picture of what you plan for this offseason and everything.
For sure. Whatever the plan is, start making those moves now. It needs to be congruent.
Yes. I would just not make any like quick reactionary moves. We wouldn't, you and I, to just try to make this team as good as possible, because we don't think there's like a quick fix there to all of a sudden boost this team up to new heights. You know,
like, we don't know what's out there, what's available. I would quickly make a move that adjusts for a year down the road.
Yes, exactly. So, and something can like make you better now and next year too, obviously. But it needs to fit that, that idea.
I talked about this yesterday, but I just did the episode solo, so I didn't even like text anybody or bounce this off of anyone. So I'm curious of your perspective of this hypothetical trade, as I think the most likely type of trade to go down on Thursday is a D'Angelo Russell trade. And we've talked ad nauseum about preserving the salary slot and the idea of doing that by getting probably an aging point guard, right? A Mike Conley, Kyle Lowry type thing, that they're under contract for multiple years, and there's some value in that. Though it just doesn't, to me, feel like enough. So I started looking at other different things. And a primary motivation for me, if, again, in the greater landscape of the plan here, was to not have D'Angelo Russell on the team, then I would be willing to make a move right now with him that might sacrifice some winning for the long term. And so the thing I threw out was D'Angelo Russell for Will Barton, Monte Morris, and DeLon Wright, and that Washington would throw in a pick back to the Wolves, and a bit, potentially a first round pick, like a protected first round pick. And I think the reason you need to find a team that would be able to want that. And I think Washington is in one of those situations where, like, if they do that, given that Porzingis is probably going to opt out, Kuzma's going to probably opt out, like, Washington could then be this team with that move that has like $50 million in cap space this summer and has D'Lo's bird rights. So you could have Bradley Beal, you could get a max contract player, and you could have D'Angelo Russell for like $25 million a year if you wanted to sign him. Or you could, let D'Lo walk, and still have some cap space there. So it's like this idea that you're trying to take advantage of Washington's salary cap situation, get them to throw you an asset while acknowledging you probably get worse by replacing D'Angelo Russell with the combination of Monte Morris and DeLon Wright at point guard and Will Barton in the mix there, who I'm not saying any of those players are anywhere near as good as D'Angelo Russell is, but I kind of like the idea of the point guard position being like a $9 million player, and it's with J-Mac, that player kind of supports Ant moving into more of a primary playmaker type role. Is it insane to think that Washington would throw in a first round pick there?
Well, how many years, what are we looking at for Morris and Barton's contract
situation? So Barton's $14 million expiring. Okay. Morris is $9 million this year, $9 million next year. And DeLon Wright is like $8 million this year, $8 million next year. So it's kind of like the preserving the salary slot thing, right? Where you've kicked some of that D'Lo money down the line and you've broken it in half. It's kind of like a super discounted version of that Porzingis for Dinwiddie and Bertans type trade we've had, or we've referenced mm-hmm. as a potential right. D'Lo trade. It just kind of that getting off of Morris and Wright, they make more sense on the Wolves, I think, than they do on that Washington team, given the money of it. And then obviously there's the Conley Barton connection, the Conley Morris connection.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't even need to be Washington, but it's like trying to take advantage of some situation like that where you're able to turn D'Lo into an asset. Again, if and only if you've decided he's not the type of point guard we want to have by Anthony Edwards, which, to be fair, like that isn't, I don't know that to be for sure the best path forward here, but if that's the way this organization is thinking, that's the type of trade I'm thinking about.
I don't know if it's reasonable to think you get a first round pick back there.
Yeah, maybe not.
That is suggesting, I think, a pretty high value for D'Lo. But in general, I understand what you're saying, and I don't disagree with the general path. And if you could get a first round pick there, you have to recoup some of those things at some point. And if you don't see D'Lo being like, I think being your future point guard, I don't mind recouping that there anyway and saying like, yeah, maybe we lose a little bit less. Maybe we don't. D'Lo, for as much as anything, like, he's been very good scoring the ball this year. Like,
yeah,
very good. Like, excellent shooting. Like, no question he has stole them a couple games. Like, you can point at a few of them, like the Toronto game and then the Golden State game. Like, the no question. They win that game, those games specifically because of him. But he's also not been, like, a great playoff player thus far here in a couple goes at it. So, you know, like, I don't know if you're, like, if your ceiling for this season is even much different if he's on the team or not. So, like, I'm totally for if you can try to collect future assets and recoup some things doing it via that route. I think that makes a lot of sense.
And again, it's not that you would necessarily want that first round pick. That would, I'm again
yes,
saying
this
that
is always so important to say. It's not to take somebody, it's yes. to then be able to package and get somebody else down the line. That's why I don't even know if like one for next year or something, like, really wouldn't mind getting like a 2025 back, you know? Like,
yeah, it totally could be. It would be so that you could use that first round pick, honestly, probably this summer in another trade where you're, again, maybe then you're repackaging Morris and Wright, or like Wright and Torian Prince or something like that for a really good $20 million player because you've attached that first round pick onto it. Not really good, but like, another good, yeah, an upgrade, maybe a point guard too. And maybe that player is a better fit, you feel, than D'Angelo Russell is if it's the point guard. I want to throw that out there because I feel like the only D'Lo type trade has been this idea of like getting
another
a 35 year old point guard who's going to help you this season. And as we were talking about at the beginning, like, is that in the grand scheme of things the move that this team should be making right now? A quote unquote win now move, even if it has some future salary cap value and preserving the salary slot. Like, I see value in both of them. I just don't want to hyper focus on like just that. And I see some value in keeping D'Lo too. That might be, maybe that's the option too. Giving him an extension. It's just, it feels like we've only talked about extend D'Lo or trade him for Conley or Lowry. And it's like, there needs to be a greater universe of potential trades and potential like foundations for how you even make that type of trade. So I don't know. That's just where I was at.
It was, I think one thing that I want to mention with like what we talk about with like, you got to make deals in terms of like your grand plan that even leaks into this off season. That definitely takes some blinders from a front office too, because like Tim Connelly's taking a lot of heat from the fan base in general, who have not been super thrilled with this. The returns on the Gobert trade, just the general cost. They watch Gobert on a night-to-night basis, and they're like, oh, gave up all of this for him? Maybe not always understanding his full impact, but maybe also just realizing that that's a lot for that type of player. And to then have the patience to say, okay, maybe this year isn't our year. Maybe we need to plan for like, okay, how do we attack for next year? Because that's when we think we can have our best team. It would be difficult to watch the rest of this year play out and then maybe watch like you lose a non-competitive first-round series or you don't even get out of the play-in. Like, that's possible too. Like, there would be so much heat on Connelly all offseason. It would take a lot of belief, and I would respect, frankly, like making moves that maybe make that outcome more likely.
Yeah.
If you think it's in the best interest of the 2023-2024 team. Because that, you know, look, if they do not finish as well as they finished last year after making that deal, that's going to look horrible. But sometimes you do have to have kind of the long range.
Or even just the next year range. Like,
well, exactly right. But that's just
like, it can be bad now.
Win now.
Yeah.
But you know, like you just know that this, the rest of the season and the following off season, like the heat now is hot. It would be turned up another notch. But I think that would take some fortitude, frankly, to be like,
yeah,
I'm okay with this because I believe in the results that are going to happen 1 year from now.
And 1 year from now, like that's when they have to be good. Again, because right. Rudy's going to be 31. Like, that's when, if that doesn't work, things get seriously problematic. So,
yep.
Again, it would make sense to have some foresight to address next season, because that's the season, I think, now at this point. So, again, yeah, I wouldn't only respect it. I would think it would be logical. Again, I don't know if those moves are out there that make sense, but if that type of move is out there, that's the type of move I would be more than willing to make if I was in the front office.
Good to see, though. Like, there is like a 0.1% chance that Cat comes back, they figure it out,
yes,
and all of a sudden they play really good basketball and we look stupid.
Like, absolutely. And they go to the second round. And maybe even they go easily, to the second round against a better team than the Kings, you know, or they beat the Grizzlies or something like that. Like, yeah, I you're right. That is a good thing to bring. I haven't ruled that out. I still, as much as everyone was clowning me last night about saying I think Denver's a good matchup for this team, like, I don't take last night's game to be like the Wolves would get clocked in a first round playoff series against.
You cannot. Against any regular season game cannot have those conclusions drawn, like the definitive conclusions. It doesn't work that way.
And again, first 4 minutes of the game, when they were doing Spy Rudy, it did totally fall apart until Nas got in foul trouble, Ant got in foul trouble, and then it was, yeah, it did fall apart when you had Luka Garza and Nate Knight on the floor against Nikola Jokic. Like, shocker, you know? So, I don't know. There is a case, too, to maybe keep the team as it is and hope that J-Mac back and Kyle back and Austin back and then Cat eventually back does make you a team that can contend to get out of the first round too. Though that's the conversation the front office has to have, is how realistic is that? I think it's higher than 0.1%, Jace. But it needs to
It's higher than 0.1%,
but
it certainly is.
You need to give yourself, with all the smart people they have in that front office, a percent chance of like what that is, weigh out the opportunity cost of that. And that's why I think this like deadline is low key, super complicated, and in ways going to be kind of definitive of what these next two years are. And I think that's why we don't know what the hell is going on right now. There is no real solid reporting on what the Wolves are looking at or aren't looking at. And it's kind of led to this conclusion that they're not going to do anything. Like, bullshit that they're not looking at, like, considering serious moves right now. Is we don't know what those are. We don't know what is going on. They absolutely are looking at this like 3D chess and just trying to find if there is a move to make now. If they don't make a move, it's not because they were just like, yep, coast forward, we think this is just going to like work as it is. No, if they don't make a move, it's because there is a 3D chess strategy for the summer and for the next couple of years that they're trying to weave together here. I know people don't like the move that Tim Connelly made to trade five first-round picks for Rudy Gobert. But it's totally a bridge too far to say that these are dumb front office people who aren't thinking this way and aren't thinking about this in a significantly more nuanced way than we're talking about right now, and certainly in a more nuanced way than, you know, Twitter is talking about this now. So I'm fascinated to see what happens.
I will say my 0.1%, I was in my head thinking of like getting to the finals or something. Sure. And I was like, I'm not even going to say that. And then, so then the 0.1% then seems foolish, but that's what I was thinking. Like, if I was going to put him getting out of the first round with this current roster, it would be like 15%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it would, again, somewhat reasonably, but require Cat to be come back and acclimate effectively and yeah, everyone
all
else.
Part of it. Yes. It just feels unlikely, but it's not to say it couldn't happen. But it does. That's a tall order late in the season, but yes, it could happen.
Let's wrap this up with Prize Picks, Jace. We got the Super Bowl this Sunday. I think it is the perfect time to be looking into any sort of prop bet, prop pick, or whatever. Prize Picks is super loaded with weird prop picks that you could make for the Super Bowl. What did you see that stood out to you? I'll let you know that I did two really stupid ones for mine, because I think that's what Super Bowl picking is about.
I did over 0.5 passing yards for Patrick Mahomes.
Okay. Now that is a promo. You could get 0.5. That's a free square. The Prize Picks is offering. PrizePicks.com, Prize Picks app, promo code Dane for $100. You get a free pick in Patrick Mahomes if he throws for 1 yard, but you can't pick that.
Yeah, okay. Then I also went off the wall on this one. Over, because I think this would be really fun to cheer for. Over 34.5 kick return yards for Isaiah Pacheco.
Love it.
What do you need? Like two returns? Like the ball needs to not get booted out of the end zone twice? And he probably notches that. And I think Philly wins this game and probably scores more. So yeah, I'm going with that one. I think that one seems very reasonable.
I also have a special teams one. I have Brett Kern, who is apparently the Eagles punter. I didn't know that before this morning. That he has more than 0.5 punts that land within the 20-yard line.
They also have 50-yard punts. Like, they've got some fun ones.
They do. So I like this more than like over 286.5 yards passing for Jalen Hurts. You could make they have all the normal ones too, but Brett Kern gets a punt inside the 20. That's one of my picks.
And then I went with the normal one. I'm taking the over on Kadarius Toney, 23.5 receiving yards. He looked like he was going to be a pretty big part of the game plan against Cincinnati, and it's been a growing role for him. And then he got hurt, and so it all kind of comes down to his health. But assuming he can be a full go for that game, I think he'll fly over that number.
So what were the numbers on that again?
So 23.5 for Kadarius Toney and Isaiah Pacheco, 34.5 kick return yards.
Okay.
I did not look into that at all. Philly might have nothing but touchbacks. And I would feel very stupid, but I'm going with it.
I like it. My other one is that Philadelphia allows over 0.5 fourth down conversions. So
like it.
If the Chiefs convert on a fourth down, that pick hits as well. So Brett Kern within the 20 on a punt, and the Chiefs convert a fourth down, my two picks hit there. So this is what these are always the, like, I remember like me and my roommates, like back in college, we would like do this. We'd like look up on like Bovada what they were, and we'd list them all out and be like, okay, who's on opposite sides of this? Like, if anyone disagrees, like $10 on that. Like, now it is 2023 and you can just do this obviously online, and Prize Picks again has a million of these. A little extra reason to be watching the Super Bowl or having something to track there. As always, it's PrizePicks.com and the Prize Picks app. It's not a sports book; it's daily fantasy. So you can play this in Minnesota on Sunday, or, you know, with any sport throughout the year. check it out, try it out. And if you don't yet have an account, you can use promo code Dane and they'll give you a $100 sign up bonus for trying out Prize Picks. All right, Chase, next up, they got Utah tonight. Then we got a trade deadline. Next time we talk, I think this team will be in a very, or I don't know, they'll be in a different place. I don't know if it'll be a very different roster or what it might be. I'm sure the two of us will be sitting on our phones all day on Thursday and trying to see what the Wolves and what the NBA at large does. You guys can follow Jace on Twitter at Jace Frederick. Can read his articles at the Pioneer Press. And yeah, Jace, I will talk to you in a week. Thanks for doing it.
I'm just thankful that the Wolves play late tonight because it means that I don't have to stay up late thinking that they'll make like a 10:30 p.m. trade.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Be up at the game anyway. Like, otherwise, there's nothing worse than thinking you went to bed, fell asleep, and like didn't wake up to a phone call being like, dude, they made a trade. It's like, oh.
That
almost happened to me with that Beasley Vanderbilt for Covington trade. Like, I was in bed and I had picked up my phone and I had a text and I was like, oh God. the fact that they're playing tonight, I love that.
Yes. He's Jace. I'm Dane. You can follow me on Twitter at Dane Moore MBA. I will be back to talk to you on Thursday after the deadline. Britt and I are going to record it like something around like 3 p.m. Central Time. So on Thursday night, whatever happens at the deadline or doesn't happen, Britt and I will be talking about that on Thursday afternoon. Again, till then, he's Jace. I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around, yeah.